In the last episode that I released, I mentioned that we had done a recording last week, but somehow an audio setting that has never been flipped in the 9.5 years of this show got accidentally flipped, and the sampling rate of our recording was dropped from where it usually is, which is a pretty high quality, down to this really terrible AM radio level of recording. And so there's a part of me that was thinking about, well, maybe I'll just drop this and not release it, or we'll recut it or something like that. But I'm going to go ahead and release it for two reasons. One, I think the topic that we talked about is a really good one. I think it was great conversation. And secondly, while the audio quality is really low, you can still understand what we're saying. All right, so with that little bit of disclaimer given, if this bugs you, I apologize for that. It's nothing I can really do about it. But in future episodes, obviously, we'll be back to our regular quality. And in the meantime, I hope you enjoy this one. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name is John.
This is Julia.
My name's Chad. I'm in the wrong chair.
Oh.
That's why everything is all mixed up.
You're normally sitting here.
No, everything's all
there. I should have treated you. I'm sorry. I normally sit by the warm thing.
No, everything's all mixed up.
Why are you pointing at...
Oh. I'm pointing at the...
The warm thing. The register?
The register. Thank you.
You did a finger... No, never mind. Role-playing games are fun, and they're a creative outlet for your imagination.
John, there's a topic we've been wanting to roll with you for some time, and you've been out of pocket getting arrested in Europe and all kinds of crazy things.
That is true.
So let's get to that one. This one actually goes back to Gen Con.
Yes.
So.
Okay. So here's what I observed at Gen Con. Walking up and down the hallways outside of the exhibitor hall, there were games of Werewolf going on almost around the clock, and they were huge. They had 10, 15, 20 people to a circle all going around.
Now, we're not talking about Werewolf the Apocalypse.
No. Yeah. The classic party game. Some people call it Mafia. Some people call it Werewolf. Not really an RPG, although it kind of is because you're allowed to scream at your friends and lie to them.
When you make up, you're supposed to make up your character if you're playing it right.
Yeah. Well, the gist of the game, for us not familiar with it, is you have a deck of cards, and most people at the table are just going to be a random citizen. Like in Are You a Werewolf? I think you're just a villager. And there's going to be one or two werewolves who get to kill people. And then there's going to be like one or two seers who can actually try to figure out who the werewolf is. Yeah. But nobody knows each other's identity. So the seers are trying to tell you the truth so that the town will get together, because the town can opt to hang somebody or to execute them.
Well, and the seers have to be careful, because if they reveal who they are,
the werewolf will kill them.
Right. And the special rules, the element of the game is that you're all together and at least somebody is lying. And even the people that are ultimately attempting to uncover the truth very frequently don't tell the whole truth of what they're thinking, because they're trying to trip up the people who are lying, or trip up their fellow man who maybe even is on their team and could possibly be lying. The point is, after observing all these werewolf games, I sat down and played a rollicking game of Junta, which is a re-released board game from back in the 70s or 80s, I think, which has heavy elements of screwing each other and betraying your friends, much like Werewolf does.
Yeah, you play this horribly corrupt third world dictatorship. It kind of reminded me a little bit of like a multiplayer Tropico.
Yes, that's a good way of putting it.
Because you have different ministers that control different things, and then they elect a president or something like that. And then
yes,
the president
and there is a conventional board game baked into it with units and squares and counters and such. But really, much like Werewolf, it's a slightly ritualized lying game where the person who can build the most fake trust up and backstab their friend at the exact correct moment will win. And that got me to thinking, are we enjoying a resurgence, and I put enjoying in quotation marks because lots of people hate these, and this is the topic of conversation, a resurgence of games that are based on lying, screwing, backstabbing, betraying the fellow players. Coup comes to mind. I've been playing a couple games of Coup here and there when I'm meeting up with friends who are not into RPGs. You know, we're talking house parties here, not that nerdy. The Resistance, of course, came before Coup. It's in the same universe, but it's the same deal. We have a few different perspectives on these games, if and why we enjoy them, I think, in this circle. I'm going to have to amend mine a bit. I just finished Undertale, and I'm starting to feel very huggly, cuddly toward the entire world. So my taste for blood in RPGs is receding. We'll see if it stays receded. I have traditionally flocked to these games, loved playing them, loved playing the new Junta, and frequently in a rolling mafia game on Facebook, screwing all my friends and lying to them with abandon. Dan, I know you will play them, but you'll play them according to your own parameters, which usually, by my observation, include losing on purpose and really avoiding actually screwing someone in a game about screwing people.
I would describe it a little bit differently, but before I give my response, there was a set of parameters, John, that you wanted on this topic that I think is a good set of parameters
yes,
to put.
Yes, and that is no just saying people who like hardball games are assholes and people who like softball games are wimps.
Right.
Actually filthy discussing casuals. The games on the gamist merits right. of what so, they allow and if they're likely or perhaps even inevitable collateral consequences are tolerable or even good.
Yeah, and so that's what we want to focus on is not, is this a good idea? Is this a bad idea? What do we intuit about the character of the people that like or dislike
no,
them?
No.
But instead, the specific mechanics that are at work here, and while we're talking primarily about board games, this is something that still comes up in role-playing games.
Oh, absolutely.
You can have role-playing games where somebody within the party has a different goal than the rest of the party, and maybe that's even the intention going into it.
Yes. And we have... Back in the early days of the show, we beat that topic to death.
Yeah.
Because I stood at odds. I was very much in favor of totally independent character motivations, and most of the other hosts were more in favor of an agreed-upon out-of-character unity, which is a position that I'm far closer now to
yeah,
10 years later than I was 9 years ago.
What changed your mind? Because first of all, what is Undertale?
Okay. Undertale is this Earthbound-like, old-school-ish, 16-bit graphics kind of independent RPG developed almost entirely by this one dude. And the premise is that the world that you're occupying, the monsters in it, quote-unquote, are more or less three-dimensional characters who have hopes and dreams and desires and can be reasoned with.
Oh, is this the one where you go up to the monster and it's like you can kill him and there's a complete mechanic?
Yes.
Pick out a sword, kill
yes.
him, you're dead, haha, you can kill him. But every single last monster, without question, in the game, you can also go up and talk to.
Correct.
Oh.
And then when you talk to them, you can kind of get an ongoing conversation with them and find out their hopes, their loves, their fears,
yes.
their desires.
I will never kill a thing.
You could talk them
this is what happened
out
to me.
Of killing you. And it's not like, okay, well, here's monster A and you talk to him and talk about killing. Now here's monster B and you talk to him talking about killing. Now here's monster C and he tells you to go get some pies from the town, and then you bring the pies back, and then you don't get... It's, like, more complex than that.
Yes.
It's, like, existential. There.
Yes.
They're, you know, my mother...
It starts making you think.
Yeah.
And it makes you realize that if you play the game like you would play a classical JRPG, killing everything in sight, you are a beast.
Yeah, you
if
are
you
a bad
If you play the game all the
person.
Way through doing that, you literally lose your soul.
Yeah.
So the punchline of why Undertale has softened me is that...
really good.
It is really good. Is that going through this sort of... thing that looks and smells like a JRPG but really isn't, and solving everyone's problems and having the world coalesce around you rather than murdering everyone has made me want to not murder everyone as much.
That's pretty much how I approach many role-playing games.
I mean,
there
that's
you go.
How I approach
right.
everything.
I got
well,
to the
yeah.
end of that, and I was like, I don't want to play D&D anymore. All you do is kill kobolds. I want to play Dresden Files and talk about things.
Yes.
Right. Well, and that's how I play, like, Mass Effect and stuff, too. Like, I'm, like, I yes. tried being
but this
renegade.
But makes
I
Mass
can't.
Effect look as pithy and stupid narratively as
well,
it is.
I sometimes
because
feel too mean
it
still,
really
so.
Matters what you do
okay.
as far as the story uncounts.
I had
instead
that
of just, oh, God, blue, right-click for renegade.
John, let me ask you a question, as I still need to give my retort to this, but I'm trying to build a framework here for it. Why was it Undertale specifically, of all the games you've played, of all the people you've interacted with, why was it Undertale specifically that made you stop and think about that a little bit?
It did a really good job of investing me into the characters and providing an extremely stark contrast between helping them out and or just avoiding the ones that were truly determined to whack you, at least at the beginning, versus just killing everything they went through.
My answer to why I play these games the way I do is it's a way of trying to preserve the fun that I'm having. And I'm going to actually chalk this up to neurophysiology. There are two concepts within human socialization, which is sympathy and empathy. And the distinction between them is that sympathy is your ability to have concern for somebody else's pain. Okay, so let's say you fall and break your arm and I say, wow, that sucks. I understand he's in pain.
Right. Empathy is feeling it itself.
Exactly. Empathy is feeling it itself. I have incredibly strong empathy. And let me stress, it's not mind reading, it's empathy. So my brain will simulate the pain that I think somebody else is feeling, even if in truth they are not, or even if on some intellectual level, on some fully conscious level, I know they're not, but on a subconscious level, I feel that. I don't want to, you know, break my own parameters here by casting wide dispersions on people of either camp, but certainly within the camp of people that have antisocial behavior at the gaming table, some percentage of them bring that to the table from real life. These are individuals who already have some kind of, you know, social maladjustment or whatever, and that's why they go into a video game and they want to grief people. And I'm not saying all of them are like this, right? But I think you would at least concede these people exist.
They're out there. Right. I think there's a lot that the games can do that can be fun that doesn't involve gratifying real-life antisocial appetites
and
at all.
Absolutely. And I'm not suggesting that anyone who plays a game and plays it competitively, you know, which includes doing some kind of, you know, harsh things to win.
Right. Accepting that within the parameters of a game of diplomacy, you must lie, cheat. Well, you actually don't have to in diplomacy. Let's say junta. You've got to lie to win a game of junta if you're in any position of control at all. And if you can't get into position to control, you'll lose anyway.
Mm-hmm. But here's
suggesting that you can't quite suspend the empathy that you will feel when you're betraying someone as a Russia-Turkey alliance.
Yes, that is
even within the ground rules of, guys, no one's going to get mad if you attack one another over Austria-Hungary, you still will not do it because you would still feel bad.
Yes, that is exactly
it. Well, I mean, I knew that.
And so what happens, and see, that's why I was curious about this Undertale thing, because what you described feeling in Undertale, you know, you say those characters are deep, and I'm sure they are. I haven't played the game, so I don't have an opinion. But the real people I interact with are obviously deep individuals. Yeah. And so I have trouble suspending that because when I sit down at a table, I cannot put that aside. You know, the same way that somebody on the far opposite extreme might have some kind of messed up antisocial behavior they're working out, I'm over on the other extreme, and when I sit down at the table, I cannot enjoy myself by screwing people over. I won't enjoy it. And so what I always do in those kinds of games is I create a metagame. I basically create a game within a game where I am playing to my own objective, but it's not the objective of the game. For example, the one time that I played diplomacy, I won. Well, I was part of a winning axis. It was me, Chad, and Wayne. We had a three-way win. And my metagame was I wanted to see if I could play this entire game of diplomacy and never tell one lie, nor a single truth that's so misleading it might as well be a lie.
What if I told you that for the people that were there playing hardball, your presence as a more or less non-actor or as an imbalancing force who is working to get someone else to win actually pisses us off in a way that you betraying us with your army in the game would not? Would that throw this whole plan for a loop? Because
no, actually,
kind of true.
It wouldn't. Okay, so let me talk to Junta now. Let me talk to what was going on in Junta. In Junta, I had a somewhat different game that I was playing.
You know what? In that diplomacy game, I was really mad at Chris. Not because he lied to me, but because he lied poorly to me.
Oh, Chris is terrible at lying. I wish he was on the mic tonight, but no one trusts Chris. Everyone betrays him immediately because he betrays you.
It's not even a matter of no one trusts.
Yeah. Oh, God.
See, like, I feel like I'm kind of on the camp with you, Dan, but I'm not.
I was making a point. Let's not derail him completely.
No, I'm just saying. Oh,
have you ever listened to the
But screw Chris anyway. No, Chris, we love you. But I do want to hear what your point is.
So within Junta, I made this sub game of the question is, could I actually, one, remain president the entire game, which I did.
And two, could I actually keep the island somewhat stable? And I knew people were coming for me, which is why the two or three times people did, I always had a smackdown ready. You know, I was prepared for that, and two or three times I did smack people yes. down when they came after me.
And the game was so stable that it didn't go anywhere and was kind of boring because you held the reins, but you weren't trying to win.
Right, and this goes
I would suggest gently that you broke it.
Well, and I'm not disagreeing with that.
Okay.
But this goes back to the caveat I gave earlier that I have empathy, not psychic powers. It's what I am conceiving in my mind. And I think there's also probably some level of internal morality that's probably a bit overstated, you know, but the point being that it's what I feel comfortable doing, but because of the fact that it's purely my own mental construct, it doesn't have to correspond to reality to motivate me.
Right.
You know, if I had some sense, if I had an obvious displayed sense that there was deep distress I was causing, that would probably put the model off. But to hear it now, you know, X number of months after the fact, no, it wouldn't.
Oh, yeah. And I think even the hardballers, look, I am a hardballer. I've played with folks who can't take it. There are people who are dear friends of mine who I won't play Mafia with. And if it got to that level, I would prefer to just put the kibosh on the game than to modify my behavior in that manner.
Play Pandemic.
But I totally get it. What about Pandemic?
Well, I was going to say, you have people that can't handle Mafia. Totally cool. Play Pandemic.
Yeah, sure. You know, play a co-op game.
If you're going to play Pandemic with John, don't let him be the bioterrorist because he is an ass.
I'm good at my job. I don't think I've ever lost as the bioterrorist.
We've never played with him before.
As you're playing, things were happening that was affecting the personality of the character. You were playing in character. Every time you moved, it was like, I am moving here for this reason.
Every CDC location, as soon as we're getting ready to make a cure.
Yeah.
It was It was like the most depressing
game. Trying to win Pandemic by causing cascade outbreaks by yourself, moving one square at a time as the terrorist, is stupid. You will get caught. You will get your crap cured. You'll lose.
The best way to do it.
Jumping around and blowing up laboratories while they're on the verge of actually developing the vaccines, you can win the game.
The game itself will kill the team. You just need to stall the team long enough to let the game kill them.
Right. You do not win by single-handedly plunging the world into death. You use the threat of a cascade outbreak somewhere over here
while you're jumping
to
and
free yourself to get on a plane and blow up the CDC wherever they construct it, which is how I play and how I win.
So, John, turning to a question I was starting to ask earlier. Why Undertale specifically? You know, why was it, for example,
because I felt the empathy that I can suspend against real people around an asshole game for computer scripts and sprites within the context of a computer game, which the designer of the game created a sort of meta in and around to convince you is real. Within the Undertale universe, your power to save and load is internally consistent with what is going on in the world. You're godlike. And if you achieve the possible best ending of it all, the former villain pops up at the end and begs you not to erase the save file because everybody's happy. And, like, you're going to undo all of your achievements.
So it's like a Tron sort of thing.
It's sort of a Tron type of thing.
Word.
I don't have any reason other than it was so well done that it made me feel for the characters. And presenting that simultaneously with options not to have to kill them all became much more significant, much more attractive, perhaps even moving, certainly more fun than killing 9 of the green snakes and now suddenly being able to kill the blue snake. Like, it just seemed passe afterward. And I hung it up at the end and I was like, wow, murdering shit over and over again until you can murder big shit with bigger numbers is dumb. And it's internally dumb in the game.
Welcome.
And
it's so nice
if
here.
You
full
do
of
it,
life.
If you do it, EXP in that universe is execution points. And they don't tell you that until the very end if you've killed everyone. your level of power is directly proportional to how murderous you are. Mm-hmm. This just could be an afterglow thing because I finished this game like 2 days ago. But
this is an all the time thing for me.
And it doesn't mean I want conflict to all go away.
Right.
Don't want to murder everything all the time. I never did in the first place. Right. But
unless they were
aside from
paladins
that,
and you were kobold.
Well, even aside
from go ahead. We've all been cutting you off.
I have the same thing in role-playing games in general as well as those games. Like, I'll play them. I mean, we play Resistance and stuff all the time at my house. But that's normally because, like, we are like, hey, everybody come over. And then, like, 15 people are there. And you can't play games.
They scale super well.
Yeah, they do.
To say what is perhaps the first objective thing that we've said about them as such.
It can house a lot of people.
It's great to have 20 people at a game
and
like that.
And especially when you're getting tired of card games like Cards Against Humanity, where you play it all the time at all the cons and stuff, because there's like 30
people.
You're
starting to memorize the cards.
Right. And this is, it's a nice release.
The new Never Have I Ever card game is the new Cards Against Humanity.
I haven't played that. We'll have
it
to do it.
It is really
but
good.
I've noticed that I do that in role-playing games too, is that I feel terrible. I'm not as bad as you do, or you can't play the game, but like we play Resistance in my house a lot, and I like really hope I'm not a spy. Like the whole time I'm drawing the cards, I'm like, I better not be a spy. And
even when I do play, I prefer to be
a
civilian.
That's one I have never had to face, and I don't know what I would do. I've never played a game yet where it was a random traitor mechanic like Battlestar Galactica. Mm-hmm.
Battlestar Galactica you do fine because you can get it. Everyone's a human except you. It's John's turn, it's Julia's turn, it's my turn, it's your turn. First thing you do is like, hey guys, I'm the Cylon. Pop,
right.
Kill yourself. Now you're a Cylon god base directing the fleet and you're doing your thing.
But even then, that would require you to execute traitor actions that might disturb people. And I don't know if you could do it.
Right, and I've never had to deal with that.
Right.
I've never been in a game where there was a random traitor mechanic and I was the traitor. I have never once had that happen.
It's nice in Resistance, though, because you always have a partner. So I feel like it makes it a little
Resistance
easier.
Resistance is relatively softball because you always have a partner and you never die.
Right.
If you're obvious and you get and you blow it, you can get played around. But nobody gets killed like they do in regular werewolf.
Well, and a lot of times in Resistance, I'm the first one, as soon as somebody starts blaming me, I'm like, yep, I'm a spy. And it kind of works well because the other person now has the heat off them. So I can, they won't put me, sometimes, it depends.
You still don't want to identify as a spy. But anyway.
You know, I was playing a game, and I could be getting the titles messed up here. I think it's Shadows Over Camelot.
Yes, that is the precursor to Battlestar Galactica.
And my beef with that game was you have a traitor, and you have to work fairly hard to find out who the traitor is. Once you find the traitor and eliminate them, they become more powerful.
Yeah. Battlestar Galactica did a lot to improve the picadillos and sort of limitations of Shadows Over Camelot. I much prefer the game. Battlestar Galactica is just an IP that they slap over improved Shadows Over Camelot.
I did not know that, but I am satisfied that when you find the traitor and kill them in BSG, they have different abilities.
They don't just
go
away.
But it's definitely worth killing them to do it. Like, you want to find the Cylons and waste them
ASAP. It was my opinion, Shadows Over Camelot, you almost don't want to. Because, I mean, they're dangerous alive, but they are more dangerous eliminated.
I would love to have someone else from, what's the Inner Sphere RPG war game that we always
Succession Wars.
Someone else from the Succession Wars game we were in to give that perspective on playing in one of the other hot seats. Because you and I were this unbreakable access, and I knew you were never going to attack me because you're you, and I won the game somewhat trivially. I wonder how you deal with that.
I made a diplomatic detente with one of my neighbors over beer when I was playing Succession Wars. We was at Fear the Con, and there was the huge border flare-up, because it's not really Succession Wars. It's a border flare-up, the game. It's pretty much what it is. And I forget who I was playing, and I was looking at my neighbor. I'm like, there's no way I can defend both sides. I just can't. I can lose both sides, or I can stall both sides, or I can make a deal, pray he doesn't backstab me, and walk away. And so what I did is, it was my turn, then it was his turn, and so we had a while till it came around us. I'm just like, here, let me buy you a free beer. And so we went over, and we stood in the beer line, and I just laid out my entire case. I was very honest and diplomatic, and I'm like, you know, these are the rules. He actually had kidnapped my leader, or is either my leader or someone who is like second in command, princess or something.
Yeah.
And he was able to kidnap them. And I'm like, I tell you what, it'll be my turn, and then I'll make the first overture. I will withdraw my troops. It's your turn. Then you make the second overture. You return my hostage. This will be the deal. Our war is over, and we have a treaty, and then we can go focus on everything else. Yep. We're not in bed together. We're not on the same team, but there's detente. It took the entire length of the beer line to make my case. And going, I shook his hand, And then we go back, and it was my turn, and it's just like, one of us has to make the first move, and because of the order of turns, yep. It was going to be me, and I'm like, okay, here goes.
Yep.
Everybody's like, what the F are you doing? Oh my God, and blah, 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 because right, he right. stole my, he kidnapped my guy, and yeah. I arrowed in on his capital. Is a right. punitive measure.
Right, right, right.
Well,
every other player in those multipolar yeah. games wants every other player to go at each other as right. hard as they can, as fast as they can. Yeah. So a negotiated DMZ among two players, neither of which are you, is yeah. very bad news for you. And, so yeah. you're going to get yelled at.
And John, right. actually, that is also...
And he did return my error. Excellent.
That is another one of the metagames, though, that figures into my thinking. If I actually have sufficiently consistent character that people will make meaningful treaties with me, that alone can win a game.
See, yeah, but it's also super exploitable, and I exploit it, and I feel bad about doing it because I feel like I'm breaking the meta with your complicity.
Here's why I don't...
Which I am.
Here's why I don't break the deal, so to speak, in the last succession war sort of diplomacy thing. I don't break the deal. It's not a matter of, oh, I feel empathy, or, oh, am I going to hurt their feelings, or any of these wonderful things that you feel. I mean, these are all great, very human feelings. That I don't feel any of that, because I'm a bastard. The thing is I don't like short-term plays. I like long-term plays.
Yes.
I like
But the long-term game. Play in those games so often requires the perfectly timed betrayal. And sometimes, you will do that.
Sometimes it does, and I don't have a problem with that. Okay. But right. to me...
I mean, you gotta. If you want to win diplomacy, you gotta stab somebody
yeah.
in the back.
No, and I
not split the board with your four best friends. Win.
I could just never play that game.
I just...
yeah.
I can't play with
Well,
it.
You can have a multi-axis... win in diplomacy.
Well, that makes it a little easier. Sorry.
I enjoy making the deal. I enjoy making the long play. And the backstab is the short-term game.
Exactly.
It doesn't, and it to me, in the cost-benefit analysis, it doesn't pay dividends.
No, but
right.
I want a deal
you
that's
going to have to do it, but
later.
You have to do it exactly at the right time, sure. no sooner and no later. We'll beat up on someone who's not here again. The Chris method.
Live everybody
aggro all the time. Just yeah. build the Zergling unit of whatever your game is as fast as you can and send it out on attack move to the farthest corner of the map and screw everyone on the way.
And all of them spew nothing but lies.
Yes, yes. You're gonna lose that way. On the other hand, the Dan method of never stab anyone in the back,
no.
you typically have to invent your own metagame
okay.
in your head because you're never
See,
gonna
here's
win
where you're
as
wrong.
It's written down.
Here's where you're wrong.
I'm right.
You believe the Dan method is never to stab anyone in the back.
Yes.
That is not it. Dan is going for the ultimate long play.
Be nice to everybody.
Multiple years,
no,
it spans multiple games.
You
multiple
get an incidental benefit from that reputation.
You have a reputation
nah,
for being 100%
I don't believe
honest
it. I don't believe
all
it.
The time, never backstabbing somebody, but then one day, on your deathbed, you're going to be like, John, let us play one last
okay,
game of
okay.
diplomacy.
If that happens, I will
Boom.
Love it. If this is all a 20-year long game,
please.
I will love it, but it's not.
180-year-old Dan is going to be up on your life support bed chamber, dipping down on your forehead, going, teabag, boop, 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 why don't you trust these nuts, boop.
Oh, my
yep.
God.
There is a longer game. No, I'm not playing along like that. There
yes,
is a,
you are.
There is
I will
a longer,
never trust you.
There if is. You betray me in one of these strategy games, I will stand up and applaud. Invert your empathy. But you have to do it for everyone else, too, because then you're just going to do it to me every game and feel good about it, which is probably what I just invited.
You don't
anyway,
you get
go
one
on.
Play.
But there is a longer game of the fact that we talked some episodes back about an Epoch of Isis game that I was running online for you and some other people
yes.
where some things occurred and you kind of got tweaked by it. And I'm like, wait a minute, why would you think I as a game
right,
master?
Right. Because said, of the thing that happened in the previous game.
Exactly, because of the thing that happened in the previous game. And in the same way, there is a long game in the sense that I like being able to carry that social capital
yeah.
forward in the next
yeah.
game. Now, to Chad's point, is this
I'm
some...
I'm right.
Is this some 70-year plan?
I yes. wish it was.
Yes.
But it's obviously
it's, no, it's not for one reason. If you were to look at my save files from every Final Fantasy game I've ever played, you want to guess how many megalixirs were used?
Zero.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm always saving
right,
them for
right.
that next worst
no.
fight.
Never
Me too.
And
I
it never happens.
No. Mm-hmm. I start throwing the top swords of the game at the last boss
oh,
during the last
no.
fight.
I'm like, no. I, you and I are
resources
like...
Resources
yeah.
exist to be consumed.
So,
and
no.
consumed.
Save,
so I'm
save,
if someday
save.
I'm there for like a $1 million purse... on a game of diplomacy, that's when I'll bring it all down.
All right, fine.
And this is never going to happen.
Absolutely use resources. And my best resources story is a Final Fantasy game. What's the one with the ghost train and the ninja?
Six.
So
the
I was
best
playing,
one.
So I was playing six, and who's the bad guy in that? Kefka. And so you're fighting Kefka, and then you make these teams, right? And he's so powerful that you're going to get one team destroyed, unless you power level grinding, which I do.
I don't do it either, and I can spank Kefka.
There's a ninja, and he has a shadow, and he has an ability where he can throw.
Yep.
Now, what he does is he throws an item, like he can throw a sword or knife or whatever, and you lose it. It's gone.
I mean, I started throwing Excalibur at that fight.
Well, here's what I did. And so I'm fighting, and guys are down, and it's this desperate situation, and Shadow's left, and if you don't know how you get Shadow and why it's really awesome, you should absolutely play this game because it's very awesome.
Everyone should play the game forever.
It's one of the
smartphone re-release a year or two ago. Yeah. Even if you played it back on PlayStation or Super Nintendo, you should play the re-release.
So yeah, it's on both iOS and Android.
So you have a smartphone, you can get it. My party's dead, and their Shadow, and Kefka is like dying. I mean, it's just, and so what I have Shadow throw. There's like a knife that's like the ultimate knife, and the knife is called Death. Or I mean, I am sure I have my terms wrong because I haven't played it in 20 years. But it was something like, it's like the ultimate knife. It had this badass name, and it was the last throw with my last guy with the ultimate weapon, and it's just like boom, and then he died. That is why you use your resources, because you get these awesome moments.
Yeah, or you just equip Genji Club and Offering and attack 8 times a turn and kill Kefka in 3 seconds.
Yeah, I'm terrible in that regard. I'll use Final Fantasy X, but I got my guy so leveled up and gotten everything that the best summon in the game was Anima.
Yeah,
it was this huge thing, like
creepy.
Yeah, and creepy too. And I got this thing so powerful that on the final boss, he has two forms. Summon Anima, first hit kills the first form. He takes on the second form. I don't remember if I summoned something.
The second form is weak.
First hit, dead.
Yeah, the first, if I recall correctly, the first form had much more HP than the second one.
It was Seymour, right?
No, it's
Yevon.
Yevon. Okay.
No, not Yevon.
You, Yevon. Or
well, Yevon is technically, yes, Jax. Yevon is technically
the final fight.
Okay.
Spoilers.
Yeah, spoilers from Game of Thrones.
You fight Seymour and then like,
well,
go to
John
Seymour,
just spoiled the best ending for a game that's been out for a week, so whatever.
There's much, much more to it than that. I had to explain that why I gave a crap about my 8-bit sprites.
This game is supposed to be really good.
It is probably the best single-player RPG I've played since FF6 or FF7.
Hmm. You're going to make me play it. And I don't have
like,
time.
It's like $10 and it's like
Dan
8 hours.
Got Fallout.
Yeah, it's real easy to get
ain't
through.
No way
really
got time
buy.
As of today, I think it was Fallout 4, Rise of the Tomb Raider, the Protoss thing.
Yeah.
As of the day we're recording, this is what, November 10th, 11th? It's point is, whatever day
it
is today,
because
I don't know when we're going to release the show. This is the day where like so many freaking games came out at once. Plus, I'm still working through Witcher and still working through Wasteland 2. So
I just reinstalled Civ 5.
But now this Undertale game does sound pretty good, so maybe I have to listen
to this. I'm watching these Blizzard cutscenes with the epic music in the background and the same Blizzard tropes over and over again about cyclical universes and things that got corrupted. And I'm just like, I don't care about you as much as I care about the skeletons in Undertale.
I just got done playing a game that I can't talk about or even name because I signed an NDA.
You're too edgy for
me. I know, right?
You're actually, three edgy this, five me.
I think this was the first game where, I mean, I've been in betas before, but this was the first game where I actually had to do an NDA that was so restrictive you can't talk about it. I think I can tell people that I am playing the game.
Half-Life 3 confirmed.
Boom.
Got
me
it.
And Gaben. Right.
Welcome to my store. Well, it's just me, Gabe Newell. I like the murder games, but I'm backing off these days. Dan invents his own game in his head. Chad and Julie, you're more or less mainstream. I mean, I've played them with you. I've been betrayed and lied to by both of you, but you're not.
See, to me,
I don't like doing
bad.
It.
It's a mechanic.
Yeah,
I mean,
me too.
It's all
I used to spend. It's like there's going
more
to court.
Yeah.
I want to rip your head off, but the bell rings, and then
you
I don't actually want to kill you.
Yeah, I will say, I never played a game with a betrayer mechanic with Julia. I have with John and Chad, with both of you guys. I will say that when I know there's no treaty on the table, like game like Battlestar Galactica,
sure.
You know, I do certainly have to keep an eye on you guys, and there is a lot of thought of when
you
if you were going to do something, what would you do? When
you
would
have
you do it?
No idea how happy the statement is. When I play with you, I have to keep an eye on you.
You don't need to keep an eye on me at all because I consider you a puppet state from the moment the first part of play.
Honestly,
see, like I have energy right now because of that.
When I play with Dan in these betrayer type games or whatever, it's a race between John and I to see who can ally with Dan first, and I play the 30-year friend card every time.
The only thing that works against you, Chad, and this is just, I don't know, the probabilities and statistics of life, or I guess the trends of life, the same way that I never draw the betrayer, you freaking always draw the betrayer.
Yes, I do.
That's why
I'm always the cyclone.
It's like how you have Wayne roll when you want somebody to fail.
Uh-huh.
When I sit down at these tables, I just presuppose you're the betrayer, not because of anything about your own character, but because, holy shit, you're always the betrayer.
I just talked about that. Shoot you in the back. And we've played Civ and Battletech and stuff. Yeah. You'll shoot somebody in the back.
I have sat down to Werewolf and I say, I'm the Cylon. They're like, it's the wrong game. And then suddenly I pull a Cylon card out. Because, I mean, that's just what happens.
We were just talking about this Saturday. My husband's the same way.
Mm-hmm.
In Resistance, he is almost always a spy. It is uncanny. That kid draws a spy card every time.
Resistance annoys me because I can figure it out and then not convince enough other people and then lose, which is of course
an integral
element of the game and part of the meta and part of the skill set, which I should be able to win because I'm a freaking lawyer. But sometimes it still blows me up.
Yeah, sometimes people don't listen to you.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes people vote with the girl no matter what.
That's not always true.
Everybody well, it's not always true.
They never listen to me. True. I don't talk loud enough though. It's probably right. I'm pretty soft-spoken and too nice, so they're like, Julie would never f*** over another person.
That's right.
Nobody believes me. I sit down at the table.
I don't believe
you. We haven't even dealt the cards out yet, and I'm like, I'm the betrayer, guys. And then they don't believe me. And then they trust me.
I would.
And that's great.
You have a trusting face.
I do.
Why do you think the one time I played Battlestar Galactica with you, and of course you were the Cylon,
of course,
that I was playing the Engineer, and it was just like,
everybody trusted me.
It was like Fort Knox. I mean, everything I could do to harden my position. It's like, I know this is coming.
Yeah.
I like being a bastard with Wayne. Wayne is a good partner. I don't know why.
Because he's a soulless ginger.
I guess so.
What it is, it's not that
he has no conscience, no moral compass.
He's not a schemer. He's not a jerk. He's just a dude.
You
want
to know what it is?
What?
It's not that he's particularly good at being a betrayer or whatnot. It's not that he's particularly bad at it either.
He just takes so much glee in it.
That's true.
It makes him so happy when he pulls it over.
And he's
you.
So easy to underestimate.
I feel like my brother and him are in the same camp in that line too. My brother's like, when we play,
Wayne's more devious than your
is
brother.
Is he? Okay.
Oh yeah.
But like,
oh, yeah.
Jason loves, like, it's part of the game to him. And so if he can win that part of it where he's like, I did something to you, you know.
All right, whatever.
But he might not do it as, I don't know, I've never played
I mean, that's another other aspect of this. It's the anti-Dan. It's people who are not playing to win because they're trying to be nice. It's people who are playing to win because, oh man, I got you with that move.
Right.
And then I lost. Like that's amateur in Bush League, but outside of the most crappy
and
levels.
See, Wayne doesn't do that.
Wayne doesn't do
the
that
long game. See, that's why he's dangerous to play gets the betrayer card. When he gets the non-betrayer card, you know, he's like everybody else. He's, you know, just trying to keep the ship alive moving and whatever.
I noticed something. I was digesting this mentally to see if it was right. And the more I'm listening, the more I think it is. Do you realize how much our GMing styles reflect what we're describing about our board gaming styles?
I'm always the betrayer.
Well, no. For example, with you,
the long
you
game.
Love to see. Yeah, you love to play the long game with the party. Set them up. There's something right in front of their face, and then make them fall over. With me, I'm always on the party's side. You know, there might be pressure, or whatever, but ultimately, I want them to get through, and I want
you
them
champion
to
be, the party.
Yeah, Wayne.
I'm the same way.
Wayne loves to pull his fast ones.
Yeah.
You know, Wayne's got to
not screw you over,
right.
But just the
whole
the
time
twist
it was
in the
this.
Plot. Yeah, it's the whole time. It was the
it
old
turns
man.
Out it's man.
Yeah.
I run a caring, heartless universe. I do my roles in the open. I look to the appropriate page of the rule book, and if
but
you die, you're dead.
After,
exactly. It's all very clinical. It's all
but
very
do you now anymore.
I still do, but I am less interested in running a game where on day one you kill 9 kobolds and on day two you kill 7 orcs up and up and up and up.
Mm-hmm.
And of course my games were never entirely that simplistic to begin with. I would be much more inclined to run a game that was about setting and relationships than I was a week ago. Contra, like, kill. Yeah, I got done and I was like, I want to play or run in some Dresden that has a combat like once a month.
Yeah.
Well, and I feel like...
Like Wayne's Game, which is awesome.
I feel like it also reflects like gaming styles too, because like me, Mary, you know Mary, she's a lot like me too, where she's got empathy and she doesn't like, you know, she likes to be diplomatic.
She'll kill people.
She will. So will I.
I run for Mary.
So will I.
Yeah.
So will I, but she would much rather talk her way out of something than fight something.
Yeah.
Every time I've ever played with her.
Why I love Blades in the Dark.
Well, we're playing a game of werewolf. That's like a murder machine game.
The apocalypse.
Yeah, the actual role-playing game. And we have talked our way out of 4 fights as werewolves who could just destroy people. And it's because her and I in a game, we're like, hey, we can talk our way out of this. We don't actually have to fight. And
I've noticed myself tending toward the good more and more lately. My last dude was a paladin, lawful good paladin. I don't know where it goes from here. Maybe I just turn into a granola munching hippie.
Yeah, say happy rainbows and...
That's what it was. I watched the Bob Ross marathon.
Oh my god.
It's all come together.
Yes.
Oh my god, I didn't even think about that. I probably watched 10 hours of that in the 9 days that it ran on Twitch.
So I typed
good game at the end of every painting.
I watched my childhood of that.
Oh, I was on channel. He was still doing it, making new seasons when I was a kid.
Yep. Have you seen the Boondocks where they spoof Bob Ross and the punchline at the end is he's actually this incredibly destructive, law-breaking, and nobody believes he is because of the way he comes off.
My uncle looks like
Bob Ross in Boondocks was playing the long game.
I have been blitzed by media about how it's okay to have feelings and not be a dick. And I'm just...
Well, yeah, you're a millennial.
Melting away. No. Not the millennial brand. Bob Ross.
Right.
Bob Ross didn't teach you how to be a millennial, whiny, smartphone-checking victim baby. He taught you how to paint a tree. It was
constructive.
A happy
the
tree almighty brush with
happy.
Little Prussian blue and titanium white.
Yes.
Everyone typed HWITE every time he said white for 10 days of 40,000 spectators. It was the best time I've ever had on
this
Twitch.
Twitch? Because I thought you couldn't do anything but video games on Twitch.
No. They launched the creative channel with a Bob Ross marathon.
Twitch.
And now they play him every Monday night.
Twitch is launching a creative channel.
Okay.
So, like, making videos of people
making
things.
Okay, so, like, I can paint or draw whatever.
And they launched it with a marathon of every single Bob Ross episode in order.
Wow.
Back to back. Without commercials.
It took days.
Yes.
I can imagine.
Amazing. It was amazing.
They put a press release out at the end. They were like, yeah, we didn't know how this would go over, but there were 40,000 of you on this the entire time. And for the finale, there were like 120.
Yeah.
So we're bringing back Bob Ross Monday forever.
Yeah, it started out as ironic and then turned into like this movement.
Yes.
It was crazy.
Huh.
I did not participate.
I didn't even know what was going on. Last I heard, like, Twitch was only video games. I didn't know they were launching other... that's cool era, though.
Yeah.
I'm curious what else to launch. But anyway.
Maybe a role-playing game.
You know, maybe so. And we can Twitch a role-playing game.
Twitch you.
Whoa.
Wait.
I don't know.
I don't know what that
Twitch
means.
We're going to be relying on that sales angle if we want to get viewers on Twitch.
Yeah.
So practice.
So anyway, thank you guys for tuning in. Have a great week and great game. And we will catch you next time.
Dan's going for the long play. Tell you.